Good morning.
Good morning.
Or afternoon. Can you tell me your names and ages if you want, and where do you live?
So I'm Peter Fitzgerald, and I'm 70 years old, and I live in Northeast Portland, Oregon.
And I'm Judy Butler, and I'm 75 in April. I will be. And Pete and I are married.
So we live in the same house.
And how long have you lived in this neighborhood, and what makes it home for you?
Well, I moved to this general neighborhood. I actually was born, when I was born, I lived on 12th and Stanton. So with my grandmother for the first 2 years of my life. And so when I bought my first house, it was not far from here. And when that house sold, I moved to this house in 1978. And Pete joined me in 81, basically, right?
Yeah, 1981. I eventually bought in to the partnership. And we got married in 1986.
Oh, good year. Yeah. Well, speaking of years, 2020 was a year like no other. We had a global pandemic, a national reckoning around racial justice, a contentious election. Could you tell me a little bit about what motivated you to start demonstrating last year?
Well, I'm glad you used the word demonstrating, because I think our experience was trying to figure out whether we were protesting or demonstrating. And I think for me, it turned out to be that I was demonstrating, trying to sort of advertise the problem. I don't know how it was for you, Judy.
I think for me, what really started it was we were sitting watching the news one night on dinner, and we viewed the whole video. We had no idea it was coming, and the video came on, and it was the George Floyd murder. And it's one of the worst things I think that ever happened in my life.
Yeah, to be able
to see something that appeared to be so cold-blooded, and we have two biracial grandchildren, and we were just sick at heart, and
worried about what the future was for them, and what they were going to face, because in our culture, even though, you know, genetically, people would say they're as white as they are black, our culture will identify them as black, a black woman and a black man.
And it's not like we didn't know. There had been many deaths before that, but it was something about really seeing it that clearly that made us feel like we needed to do something. And then there was some marching. Remember when the marchers came down the freeway and they turned on 33rd?
Yes.
And we got in the car and went up to see.
Well, that was actually after we had started.
After we started?
We started because we had...
Oh, we had our signs.
We had signs. We heard through a friend of yours, we heard that there was standing for racial equity up on a neighborhood street that was... So, you know,
in the Cully neighborhood.
Yeah, 2 miles away from here. And we went just to see what that felt like.
Was that immediately after you saw the murder on TV?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was...
That was within the first few days.
Uh-huh. And it was also like, we've got to do something. You know, mm-hmm. with the something that we had to do, I don't think we were totally clear on... But it felt like that was something that we could do, that we could go and we could stand and we could see what that experience was like, and whether or not that spoke to, at least for me, whether it spoke to me personally.
And we're still not completely clear. You know, we're still trying to find our way in terms of what actions make a difference.
Yeah.
So, but that's when we decided. We stood there for a few nights, and then we moved to another street for a couple of nights, and then we thought, well, why not just be on our, just near our street, and our neighbors could join us, but in the interim, this other demonstration was happening, and we walked out to see it, and we had some signs.
Right.
What did your sign say?
My sign said, I will rise up for you. And I think on the other side, it said Black Lives Matter.
And my sign was the Be the Change, which it stayed pretty much the whole time. I just, my granddaughter Tilly made that sign for me, and I just loved it. But that was that made us feel even more. We saw these young people. And it just enlivened us and gave us hope and made us feel like we should be out there too.
And so from that point, on the block that we live on, we have a really connected block, and we have a group email with neighbors able to talk to each other. So we just sort of thought of the idea, why not put this out to the block and see if anybody in the block is interested in just going right out to our corner, because there's a busy street that goes past our particular street, a surface street. Why not go and see what happens, you know, if we stand there with our same signs and just invite people to bring signs, make signs, their own signs if they want to.
How many people joined you in the beginning?
It seemed like we always had 7 or 8 people, but the 7 or 8, or maybe sometimes 10 or 12, would change, shift and change. Some people dropped off. Other people would see us out there and then come and join us. Like you did that last week, right?
Yeah.
That's how you ended up coming. There was a core group, I would say, of 5 or 6 of us that were there almost every night.
Yeah, every night, yeah.
Have you ever done anything like this before in your lives?
I did, not standing on the street, but I did some sort of Vietnam War kind of protests. Things long
and
time ago.
That's primarily when I was involved, when I was at PSU in the 60s and early 70s, and anti-war marches. And also I was in a group called, I can't remember, Peace for Portland or something, and we marched when it was infiltrated by some really scary people who had big bats and clubs, and the whole mission was to try and keep the crowd positive.
And I would say for me, it was, I don't know how you'd phrase it, but soft protesting, because I was at a private college. I'd sort of been coddled. I was afraid of being drafted into the Army for the Vietnam War, so I was thinking conscientious objector. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't as passionate. I mean, this process that we went through really came from my heart.
Yeah. So, you know, since the George Floyd killing, there was a lot of civil unrest and protests, and Portland kind of became famous or infamous for what was happening. How would you...
It's an anarchist jurisdiction.
Yeah. How would you juxtapose your street demonstration with what was happening? And do you have friends or family in other parts of the country who maybe saw what was happening in Portland and were worried what you were doing?
Well, I think that did happen. There was stuff on social media about, you know, Portland was in flames and being burned down. And we had a couple of experiences on the street where we might get yelled at or, you know, get the middle finger because, you know, they were seeing us as protesters or that our actions were reinforcing whatever was happening violently in downtown Portland. And for me, that's kind of how I began to really kind of explore the difference between protesting and demonstrating. I mean, I realized that I wasn't going to change the world standing on the street holding a sign.
Yeah.
You know.
We did march in a couple of protests and of the big ones in Portland, mostly on this side of the river. And we found them to be completely peaceful. The people were lovely. Everyone was very respectful, wore masks.
Yeah.
I never did believe that the people that really wanted a good outcome, especially for Black and brown people, were the people that were causing all the problems. It was always late at night, and it was a very small group of people. And I've gone on to be involved in some groups that are working with Portland Police to try and affect changes here. And that's what they said all along. Mm-hmm. This is a very small group, and it's a fringe group that's violent and taking up any of the destruction.
Yeah.
But we did have to think about, because we were confronted with that challenge about, aren't you just the same as, you know, violent, or, you know, aren't you just reinforcing that whole mentality? And
but I wanted to make that clear that we never did see that as the majority of the people that were even marching. So.
And for me, it became more an issue of having the courage to stand up, not expecting everybody to agree with what we were trying to say. It had to do with equity. It had to do with sort of making the issue public and maybe in people's faces, so there was some discomfort, but allowing, you know, disagreement to come our way as well, and then think about how we would respond to that when it did come our way. I remember a Black gentleman stopping and basically coming back to talk to us and ask us, why are you doing this, you know? And we had a really lovely conversation with a Black woman who stopped and said, you know, I've seen this before. How long are you gonna do this for? You know, I've seen white people stand up in support of Black people for a few days or a few weeks, and then the energy shifts the other way and people give up, you know?
And that was a big reason we also were out there, that we wanted, I think, Black and brown people to know that there were white people who would stand by them and had intentions and who saw what was happening. But at some point, we wanted also to do more to affect change in other ways as well.
How long did you stand out there?
I think on Fremont, the street that goes by the busy street, because we were doing it around rush hour, 5 o'clock until 6. I think we were there 37 or 38 weeks. We were there actually until the daylight savings time. The time shifted and it began getting dark at 5 o'clock, and we realized it was not safe for motorists to try and squint in the dust to see our signs.
Yeah.
We had that same kind of agreement as a group about rain, if it was raining really hard, because that is distracting as well. Mm. That, you know, we didn't want to compromise the safety of motorists driving by.
So over those 37 or 38 weeks, how did things evolve, like in terms of people's reactions or your own group?
We had some people join us. We had every Thursday night there was a group. There's a church up the street from us. There was a group of people from the church and who stood in front of the church, and so we went to the other side of the street to join them, and that was, it ended up being a group of maybe 15 or 20 people sometimes, and that was really invigorating. And we had, I know Judy, you began to recognize
people and wave to them, and they would wave to us.
They were like the regular commuters that would come by that, almost expected us to be there, and it evolved into one night a woman drove by and then came back with a sack full, because this is the pandemic, and this was right around the time the primaries, I think, were going to happen. Mm-hmm. And came back with a whole bag full of masks that she had made that said vote on them.
Well, the one I really remember that really touched me was the guy who went home, got a cooler, filled it with ice, and bottled water, and brought it back to us, because it was a really hot night.
Yeah.
And he said, you people, he didn't say you poor old people, but he said, you people shouldn't be standing out here like this on this hot of night without water.
Nice.
That was really sweet. That was in contrast to some of the neighborhood. A couple of neighbors that were very aggressively counter and were very disturbed by the honking. If motorists honked their approval, they were very, very belligerent toward us and very angry.
So when that started to happen, we decided that we didn't want to burden any one particular intersection each night, so that we decided that each night we would be in a different, at a different intersection to try and mitigate whatever noise.
That's a good idea.
Pollution was happening from the support. The other thing that I really remember is also the one location that we said there's a preschool or a daycare center, and the little kids really started to get into us being there every night, and then we'd be standing there, and then we'd hear this little, these little voices chanting, Black Lives Matter, or No Justice, No Peace.
And we weren't chanting, but they picked those up from somewhere and recognized. And then some of those kids actually, a couple nights, asked their parents, couldn't they come and
stand with us?
And so the parents would stay after, you know.
Cute.
So that was cute,
It was.
And in the very beginning, when we were in the Cully neighborhood, we met this man named Bo, who came and talked to the group about racial equity and racial issues in the Portland metro area. And he was an educator, had worked in a high school and done a lot of diversity, equity kind of work. And we just both really connected with him. And he came and found us on the street and talked to us again. And he started a group in the park educating people and kind of helping us learn more. And we're still working with him, you know, to this day. We're meeting about every 3 weeks now. So that was a really great benefit that came out of this.
Are there any other stories or memories you want to share about people you met or interactions you had?
The story we're telling right now, all of this was happening in the summer of, you know, the summer and early fall of 2020. And now here we are in 2021 in March. And when we stopped going to the street, I personally really missed it. I really missed that continuity and that I still had some... You know, I still was probably wrestling in my mind with how long are you going to do this? You know, how long do you need to do this? What do I need to see that would tell me inside in my heart or whatever that I got my message out, or things are changing, or systemic change is happening? And I still don't have the answer to that question. And so I'd heard about another group that was kind of at a convenient time during the week, from 10 o'clock in the morning until 11, only 3 days a week, not every night, you know, seemed much more manageable, that was also standing nearby, about 10 blocks away. And so I decided to, you know, take my signs, go see what was happening. And it turned out to be this really lovely group of older women. When I had this conversation, one of the women's names is Caroline, and I asked Caroline, how long are you going to do this? And she said, well, the last time I did this was I stood on a street corner for 14 years. And I was like,
that was the Vietnam War, right?
I think that was the Vietnam War, yeah. I was like, okay, this lady is really committed. Until something significant happens, she's going to be there. And so she's been kind of my role model. And then, interestingly enough, Judy was talking about Bo Stevens and the group that he runs. And we meet up on Zoom, on, you know, virtual. She shows up on the Zoom screen. And
Caroline. Yeah.
Well, and the other woman that.
Yeah.
And I didn't really recognize her because we always have our masks on, and so I found out later that she's the lady that's on the street.
That's funny.
And Bo Stevens has driven by a couple of times and always like rolls his window down. What's up? What are you up to? You know. Hey, Bo.
And I, at the very beginning of the pandemic, had gotten involved with a group that's people from the various faith communities. And I came in as the representative for a Buddhist Sangha that I'm part of. And they work with the Portland police and with other community agencies to try and effect change. Mm-hmm. And so I do that every other Friday morning. And then from that, I also joined another group. Plus, we started in our Sangha a racism committee. Mm-hmm. And a couple groups of us have broken into small groups that are doing work around, our group is doing work around reading My Grandmother's Hands and processing that book together.
Wow.
So I just felt like I wanted to do something different, and then I'm also looking for other, you know, possibilities. Like I'm doing a lot of writing letters and communicating with politicians.
As your husband.
Yes.
I'm curious. I mean, do you see, I personally don't think in my lifetime we're gonna necessarily see what we hope to see. I mean, I think we might see incremental change, but we may not see the big change that we might be hoping for. And so, how do you see it?
No, I think it's gonna be a long haul, a really long haul, and I think that's why it didn't get done in the 60s, because we all got distracted having kids and raising families and trying to make a living, and I was a social worker, so I mean, I was working with people, but it wasn't as focused as it, you know, might have been. So I think it's gonna be a long haul, but I do think we can affect some. I do want to see some changes.
I just see so many complex issues happening because during this street demonstration thing that we've been doing, our grandson, who's going to be 19 really soon, had a very good friend who was shot and killed kind of randomly, and a friend he was with was wounded very badly, and then just Monday night, March 1st, two blocks from their house, there was a shooting at a park where one person was killed and the other person badly wounded. And I find myself shifting towards this, my signs change suddenly about gun violence and ending, that we've got to do something. It just kind of points out how complex all the inner linked parts are to this whole issue, how complex it is, and sort of where you focus your energy. But right now I'm focused on, we got to do something about gun violence in Portland, Oregon, because it's terrible.
And in fact, today I got this notice from the mayor's office and the chief of police that they're doing extra teams, or yesterday I got it, that they're doing extra teams Friday, Saturday nights, this weekend, actually all weekend, so that it can patrol more heavily and have people available to be on the scene immediately, arresting and getting evidence. And they're very, very alarmed at the number of murders so far this year. And there was a video made by the Office of Violence Prevention, which you know, included two of Miles' friends, actually, that both died. A female who died as a result of domestic violence, 18 years old, who just graduated from high school. And the video, I mean, the people were all ages, and they were white, and they were black, and they were, it's a huge problem of people who are hopeless, disaffected, want to take it out on someone. I don't know, it's going to take a long time.
Well, this is probably more like the, why are we doing this?
Kind of a thing. And where does it go?
And it's, I remember telling my sister and a close friend about the friend of Miles that was shot. And the first question, and my sister's white, I'm white, my friend is white. And the first question they asked me when I told them the story of Jameer being shot and killed, they said, well, was it gang violence? Mm-hmm. And I realized that it didn't matter. Yeah. You know, it doesn't matter if it's gang violence. Nobody who's 18 or 19 years old deserves to die. And so what if the person was in a gang? I mean, it's sort of like we cannot become inured to, if it's gang violence, then it's normalized, you know, it's okay.
And if they're in a gang, they need something desperately that they can only get from that gang, and why is that?
And why is that?
And that goes back to the roots of a lot of the problems that are leading to this.
Right.
And I think we continue to work on these issues because we want a better world for our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, should we have them, which I'm sure somebody will give us a great-grandchild, whether we're here to see it or not.
Yeah, whether we're here to see
but
it.
But we want a better world. We can do so much. There's so much potential. And that's just a tragic thing in all of this, I think.
And I would say that if I'm, you know, I know things are complex and hard, and we hear a lot of sad and, you know, grieving kinds of stories, and we have this image out in the world that Portland is this anarchist jurisdiction area. But one thing that really gives me hope is this little effort that we started, you know, however many months ago, like our block and the people that joined us, you, Leslie, it feels like we created this little community this community that's committed to that process of a better world. And that really has a feeling of hope. We have this relationship with Bo, where when Miles' friend was shot, I texted him and Bo immediately called me on the phone and we talked it through, you know, because I was struggling with, you know, What do I, as a white grandfather, what do I do? What can I possibly do to protect my grandson, you know?
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot I can do. It kind of comes down.
And he said, kind of in a really nice way, yeah, that.
Right.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, welcome
there
to my world.
There isn't anything you can do. And that shouldn't be.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, and I think we've shifted. We love our grandchildren to the moon. We had this belief, I think, that if we love them enough, everything would be fine, you know. And it really is more than that.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask how this experience changed you. Sounds like that might be.
Yes.
I think that's a big part of it is that it involves love, it involves compassion, it involves listening, but it also involves action, and it involves speaking out what the truth is,
yeah.
You know, talking about the truth of what our culture has created. And trying to find allies in that process, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know about you, but that's kind of how I see it.
No, I think that's well said.
Yeah.
I think you said earlier about what gives you hope. I don't know if there's anything more you want to say on that, but I mean, this has been a really big year. What makes you optimistic looking ahead?
Well, it does make me optimistic to see that there are so many people that are concerned and working on this issue. And it makes me really optimistic to see the joy and creativity in the African American community, the Latinx community, in addressing a lot of these issues. And a lot of the diversity educators aren't urging people to be, you know, give your whole soul to this. They're talking about balance and taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
And some things that I think sometimes we lose sight of in, you know, white middle class America. It's just, and that to me is very hopeful. And the interactions that I've had with people on some of these, in some of these groups and committees, has just been very, very heartfelt, you know.
Well, for me, hope, I see less silence about things. I see, say the Capitol, the insurrection thing that happened at the Capitol. Sure, there's a faction of people that think that that was the right thing to do, but there's also a huge faction of people that were shocked and upset about that. I see people talking about it more. I see young people, you know, doing things. I just think there's just so much more awareness of whatever the issues and the problems are. And I think, you know, basically, a vast majority of our population wants a better country, a more equitable country, a more just country.
And I do really believe that everybody loves their kids,
mm-hmm.
and wants them to be happy and do well and have good schools. We just don't all know quite how to get there to that. And we certainly can't all get there if we don't have the opportunity and are shut out of the process. So I think this is a good start on it. Even the changing of the names of the high schools, I think, is hopeful.
Yeah.
It's like a fresh start.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people will call that cancel culture or, you know, political correctness or whatever it is, but I think some of that is you have to learn from history and you have to be able to face history and yourself and, you know, come to terms with how that evolved and change it if it's not for the greater good, you know.
What do your kids and grandkids say about what you two have been doing past many, many months?
They don't talk much about it at all.
Well,
they were. I know there was some concern about whether we'd be safe.
Whether we'd be safe. Mm-hmm. I know you remember the women's march that happened.
Yeah.
So we were at the women's march with Molly, who's our 16-year-old granddaughter, and Duncan, who's our 14-year-old
grandson.
And their parents. And so I think they've said that they're proud of us, you know. I think our adult children that live in, you know, we have a black son-in-law, and so, I mean, this is nothing new to him, really.
No, in terms but actually, it was cute, because one day he was driving home from work.
And he drove by,
and then he went around the block and came back and pulled over and talked to us, and we were just finishing, you know. He looked happy.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they worried for our safety.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, interestingly, I never felt unsafe.
I was going to ask.
I felt we were confronted, but I never felt physical fear or feared for my physical safety.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you did.
Well, no, even this one time, this really big man came from walking across the street, grabbed my sign and threw it in the middle of the street. But I thought he was wanting to take the sign and hold it with us. So I was just kind of, by the time the incident was over, I was kind of like, oh, maybe I should have been a little nervous about that. But he was gone by then. He just walked on.
Yeah.
So no, I didn't feel that either.
Would you say that was the minority of reactions?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, even now when I'm on the street now, you know, maybe I get, or the group gets, two or three thumbs down. The other day I got somebody to give me two middle fingers, but that's like one car out of, you know, 50.
Yeah.
You know, typically it's waving, typically it's a little horn honk, occasionally a window rolled down and, you know, somebody with their fist out of the window, or a peace sign. That's a hopeful feeling, given that it would be unrealistic and magical thinking to think that everybody would beep their horn and give you a thumbs up. It makes it more real when you have some disagreement, because that's kind of the nature of a democracy is healthy debate. So,
yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be sad if a moment went by where everybody was just supportive and we got no middle fingers or no thumbs down, you know.
I always loved it when people would drive by and they'd have kids in the car, especially Black families or young Black men, mm-hmm. and they just grin. They look so happy that someone was standing up for them. And then I remember I was holding my little Be the Change sign, and this couple pulled up to the curb, and the guy rolled down the window, and she was Black and he was white. And he leaned across and he said, you know, and I had my Be the Change, and he leaned across, he said, "We are." And I said, "Yes,
we are the change."
Yeah, we are the change.
Yeah.
And it was just so sweet and poignant, you know. So
well,
there were those really happy moments.
That's probably what it's going to take. It's going to take that couple having mixed children, those mixed children having mixed children, you know, as we start to kind of blend more and more. I have a really similar memory of the car that stopped, and it was a white grandmother driving the car, and in the passenger seat was a young man that was about Miles' age, teenager, Black teenager. He rolls the window down and he looks me right in the eye, and he didn't speak, he just mouthed "thank you" with his mouth. He just said "thank you."
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I just went, touched my heart, and you know, that meant a lot to me. So those are the things, those are the kinds of experiences that made it really worthwhile. You know.
Okay. Well, any last reflections before we end our conversation?
My only reflection is that it was, thank you for prompting us to do this, because it's a wonderful story to retell. I mean, it really makes me
It does
happy.
Bring up really good feelings.
Really
yeah.
good feelings to
yeah.
retell this story.
And we're still building our story. Because
yeah.
we're still out there working.
story. Yes, we are. Yeah.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you. Oh my God, I loved it.
that was really
are
fun.
Are you sure you're
that
finished?
That was really fun.
Oh my gosh, you're so good.